Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And we had a lot of good phone calls this last week. As a matter of fact, I think the Wyoming call went swimmingly well. And as a matter of fact, we didn't get enough callers that we were hoping to get. But the points that we made were on target. And as a matter of fact, we were able to use a lot of leverage because it happens to be that time of year, folks, where all of a sudden people have realized just how over the barrel they've been taken when it comes to their taxes. And I'm telling you, in Wyoming, the state legislature upped their taxes. See, think about this, folks. You have a Republican form of government. You are supposed to. The Constitution guarantees a Republican form of government, which is a government that is representative of the sovereigns. Which means in America, because we go through this all the time, it is one that's based on the rule of law, and it is also based on representation of those sub-elements of our government, which are the people and that small government that the people have created within the state. That would be the people in the county and the county itself. Because the polity, the government that is the closest to us that we have formed, then that government itself is, you know, an established government. The problem that everybody is dealing with right now is that they have not created, and we the people need to create constitutions for your county. If it's the most important government, then why have we ignored that government? Because let me ask you this. Do you want D.C. to have all the powers to dictate what you can do, how much water you... I mean, literally, they're going to give you standards that are based on Arizona, desert, drought, Nevada, and so forth, that you can't even have a lawn, because that's what bureaucracy does. But when you have a local government that's empowered with those types of decisions instead of a central government, then if you live in the Pacific Northwest, you can actually legally have a lawn. Now, they try, you know, central government will try to seem like they're not tyrannical because they don't want people to revolt. But the fact of the matter is, we have a distributive form of government. The way it was designed was it allowed political energy to be outward flowing to where the majority of the decisions would be made at your local level. So I'm going to go back to this whole concept that because you do not have a county constitution. Now, there may be in the original 13 states, you may find, and somebody may tell you, oh, we have a constitution for our county. Why didn't they do that when they established the territories? Well, maybe they were in such a hurry that they, you know, were too busy fighting off Indians. Well, I don't know about that. What I believe is that they cut corners deliberately, where the federal government was actually doing more and more nefarious things in creating a shift that as they were bringing new states into the union, they were going to try to control the states more and more. And when I went through the Enabling Acts, and we'll go through the Enabling Acts later when we get into the content of Enabling Acts, but right now we're going through the ratification debates Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I'm hoping that we can get Paul to join us for tomorrow, because I do like going through the debates and this content type stuff with somebody else. It's always nice. And you're more than welcome to join. You're more than welcome to, you know, I don't want to necessarily bump Paul, but I would like to actually get more engagements from my listeners, because I know there's lots of people out listening. But today's show is focused on the special game changer messaging and what the heck is going on, folks? Because if we're not talking about it, then we're making a big mistake. But I can't emphasize enough that as we start going through, and one of the things that we need to go through, that we're actually going to be doing this in Wyoming, we need to do this in Montana, we need to do this in South Dakota, we need to do this in every state when we start having these state calls, We need to go through your state constitution and highlight all of the parts in it that are absolutely problematic with the U.S. Constitution. Too many states have established within their constitution a corporate government. Now, again, near as I can tell, the Constitution guarantees us a Republican form of government. And when you look up forms of government, there's nowhere where it actually says a corporate form of government. Now, we're also finding out that there were these tendencies. Now, see, one of the things that became big in England when the people started migrating to America is they started creating these corporations, these associations. Corporations back then were a lot different than corporations are today. And when it comes down to how can you measure whether you have a Republican form of government or literally a corporate form of government is when you actually start looking at who is controlling the money and controlling government. Because bottom line, if it is not the sub-element, the sovereigns, the counties, and the people of the county, then you have perversed yourself. Because when you're looking at the corporate courts, when you're looking at the corporate government, and in Wyoming, I just want to tell you this, because this is really what got people. I think there's people right now that are coming into the fold regarding Reclaiming the Republic, because in Wyoming, they just did their taxes and they go, oh my gosh, one person that's joined in actually, you know, as after doing their taxes, said my taxes in the state of Wyoming went up 198%. Folks, you got a government doing that to you, you and the people of that state will not sustain that type of tyranny. There, in other words, what they're trying to do is they're trying to destroy getting people to move out of Wyoming. They have too many people in Wyoming. And that is the message that they're sending. Keep it small, keep it all. And this is exactly how Agenda 21 plan or 2020 or the 3030 plan, whatever the plan is. It's morphed so many times. Agenda 21 is morphed in so many different ways. But the bottom line is it's all about control. So I got some obligatories. As you know, the show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. And that's the huge difference between what we're doing and what everybody else is doing. Because if you're only complaining and go, yeah, you need to put, I actually poked a politician, I think he was in Georgia, in the eye on social media this weekend, and I said, look, you know, you, just like everybody else, basically say the same things. And as I read what you're saying is that you do not understand the Constitution. And then I walked down this case in point regarding the Department of Transportation. And this guy just basically kind of, you know, went into the woodworks and said, well, I'll look up what you got. Never heard a peep from him since. You got to start holding people accountable. See, the reason why government is the way it is because we're not holding it in check. The ultimate checks are in the hands of the people. And people have just given up on this. Folks, don't give up. That's why we're losing, because you're giving up. All we need is a few people to take a stand, and the second man theory will kick in. Other people will come. People will realize it's not going to be a full-time job in taking back government. All you need to do is just start administering petitions, following the evidence. If these folks are not supporting the Constitution, then when it comes down to it, if they're not going to step down, if they're not going to make it easy for you, then you make sure that they're done at the end of their term, because that's what it boils down to. And the problem is, the reason why we're not doing a good job of getting rid of people at the end of their term is we're not making the academic case throughout the year of how these people are violating their oath of office and not serving us. You know, folks, if you actually did your job, and it doesn't take a lot. I mean, I know people that actually work you know, in Wyoming, these guys work long, hard hours. You just to place context to this, many of the work that is done in Wyoming, if some of these guys that I'm working with that have these careers, like they're ranchers or they're in the energy industry or what have you, from October, November timeframe, maybe early December, they pretty much don't do hardly anything. Their job is done for the year. And by the time April comes around, they are working around the clock, whether it's out in the pastures with the cattle or whatever it is, or if it's the energy fields and so forth. The things slow down in the wintertime there, but they don't have a lot of time. So getting time from these guys to actually join in on these calls is huge. But the fact of the matter is that as busy as they are compared to you, I mean, there's most people just have a 9-to-5 job. And so the reason why we don't have time, those of us who have 9-to-5 jobs, is because, oh, well, we have hard-coded our entertainment and our, you know, have basically spent, let's call it disposable time. You have time to do this, but you'd rather spend it on something that I would consider disposable. These are honest conversations that only you can have with yourself. Look at yourself in the mirror. I look at myself and say, I am doing everything I possibly can. As a matter of fact, you know, my beautiful bride, she would love to see me just kind of give up because it's consuming when you spend this much time, but she understands how important this is. So, I mean, she's pulled both ways, but she is very supportive. But the fact of the matter is, are you doing enough? That's the question you have to ask. And only you know that when you're sitting there late at night watching television, when you could actually be going, you know what, let me start looking at these petitions. Let me see if I can reach out to my friends and find some time and just send an email. Start reaching. You know, you might actually make the handrail. You might actually make it to where you get good footing and get established. You'd be surprised what happens when you take a step of faith. You know, who was it that walked out on the water? Because they used their step with a step of faith. They stepped with faith instead of just, you know, oh, well, you know, as a child looks at water, doesn't understand it. But as this person, as an adult, understood what that water was, it was not within his will well that he could walk on it. Now, the fact of the matter is, folks, well, I'm not asking you to walk on water. I'm not asking you to perform miracles. I'm asking you to do something you can actually do. So enough of the, you know, guilt, manipulation, grandpa practice I'm working here, because, you know, grandparents usually, you know, it takes practice to become really good at making people feel guilty. And that's a good, you know, that's a good sign that you're well on your way being grandparent material when you can start making people feel guilty. Now, when we're covering, because this is a special Game Changers episode, and we're covering the waging of war, the tactics of warfare. Now, I know I've covered rebellions. I know I've covered airborne warfare. I've covered attrition warfare. I've covered biological warfare, chemical warfare, and cultural warfare is what we just started covering. Now, a lot of these warfares kind of have a direct association with our education system. And I say that because our kids, for over a century, have been taught anarcho protests and the concept of protesting and standing up and getting active in trying to move government in a direction it has no authority to move, and then allowing the move to happen. Now, when did this really first happen? Now, most people would think, oh, the 60s, the counterculture revolution was in the 60s. Actually, I'm going to tell you, the counterculture revolution, where America actually did damage to itself, was the Greatest Generation. Because America was hit right between the eyes, and we were down on our knees in a depression when FDR sold this national retirement scheme of Social Security. And that is when we were taken advantage of, because at that point in time, and as a matter of fact, G. Edward Griffin talks about in the 30s when he was in school, he talked about how they were teaching, you know, collectivism and, you know, democracy, government, and that those principles were what he was learning in civics and so forth. It wasn't about limited government, limited defined government. It wasn't about enumerated powers, blah, blah, blah. It was all about how we, the people, you know, have the power to give ourselves whatever we want, when actually that's an outright lie. The only way we can actually give something to ourselves that's not within the Constitution is by amending the Constitution. But we were told and taught that, oh, well, if we all are willing to have it, then we can have it, because we'll just let government do it. And that's what the greatest generation did. They let government do it. And over time, it became easier and easier. This is the old snow track theory. When you have to go from point A to point B, and there's deep snow that you have to walk through, then as you make that trek, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to do it to, you know, to kind of enjoy the yard and the countryside when you're going out to the woodshed, you know, that may be a ways away from the house because of however it was, you know, the design, what have you. You're going to do a beeline from the front door out to that woodshed and back. And getting out to that woodshed the first time is difficult, and the more often you go, you want to use the same tracks because that's compacted snow. It gets a little easier to walk on, and next thing you know, you have a highway in the snow going from the front door out to the woodshed. And it's well-traveled, well-compressed, and, you know, it's not a lot. You're not exerting as much energy in getting out to the woodshed as you did the first time. Now, when it snows again, you kind of have to do that kind of over again, but you're not doing it over the accumulative snow, just the recent accumulation of snow. And the point is, folks, is that when they started doing these getting us to, you know, to accept unconstitutional government, that is when they actually started succeeding in growing more and more. By 1953, the progressive Eisenhower signed off on the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare Department, which is one of the most insidious, became the most insidious departments, because each of those actually became a department of their own. Practically, welfare and health, I think, is still the same at this point. But there's, if you think so, they're actually looking to probably change that, because there is so much welfare going on. You know, Biden is offering welfare for those people who are going to get evicted. The federal government is keeping people from being held accountable. Oh, well, don't make me accountable because I'm suffering. You know what? I remember, and I'll get into the war of attrition, but I think this is important. Or actually the rebellions. I'll wrap this up and get back into this broad spectrum warfare. I remember when Obama actually came out with a policy that, you know, you could actually get a better interest rate loan if you weren't paying your mortgage. And so I know, and I remember lots of people that actually stopped paying their mortgage to game the system, because then the federal government would step in and throw a little money towards your mortgage and get you to lock into a very nefarious government contract mortgage. And so people actually, oh, well, just to save some money, that's what they did. And I am telling you, folks, that those people will rue the day if it comes down to the government having to execute some of the things, because the new mortgage loans today, I mean, they're putting your 401ks, they're putting all of your savings on the line. In other words, if you can't make your mortgage, they're willing to actually go after that. Now, the best thing you can do is actually find yourself a non-government controlled type of mortgage for yourself, but good luck with that. because government has been mandated. They have no authority to do this, by the way. No authority whatsoever. But they're getting you to buy into because, oh, boy, what? How nice it would be if I could go on a vacation instead of paying my mortgage, because I've known people that have done that. I have known people that actually took a vacation instead of actually paying for their mortgage and then got their mortgage debt, you know, completely redone, you know, vis-a-vis Uncle Sam. So don't tell me that it doesn't become easier and easier to do as they start getting us to, you know, shorten our trip or to help make our trip out to the woodshed. And, you know, the woodshed is metaphorical in two ways. Well, okay, the woodshed, you need to go out to heat your house. But there's also a connotation that when somebody does something or when somebody needs to be disciplined, you take them out to the woodshed, right? And so government, when they take you out to the woodshed, it's not to actually get wood. And they're taking people out to the woodshed like, you know, anybody that stands up against them. Like if you go to the January 6th, 2021 protest, then you've probably are right now still at the woodshed because that's what they're doing. So when we get into all of these different types of war, I want to help you understand that this rebellious warfare, this anarchal warfare, your children today are learning new tactics of warfare that you never even thought of. As a matter of fact, you know, people are kind of curious as to how Budweiser, you know, was so stupid that they were able to go down this woke. You know what? It's not corporate executives that are making these decisions. They're allowing these decisions because who are they hiring to do the work? Duh, these kids coming out of the woke education system. And they're all in there in their board meeting saying, yeah, we need to do this. And they're moving corporations by basically all agreeing, and then all of a sudden they're going, wow, that was stupid. Bottom line, there's the best way to look at corporations, and the best thing a corporation can do is to tell you about their product and avoid politics other than the Constitution. One of the things that every corporation should do, because we should hold it against every corporation that gets involved in politicians to give them advantages. We need to call them out. And when they actually get advantages, and they do all the time, folks, they get advantages where they get a bailout, they get an interest-free loan. And because they're so big, they get more and more. The smaller the business is, the harder it is. And the less access they have to that level of handouts, and that's why small businesses are being destroyed. I want you to understand why destroying small business is in the best interest of government. Because when government wants to control distribution and your availability of getting stuff, they know that your ability to get stuff, if the small businessman is still active and alive, like I've told you, whether it be gas or what have you, they're going to be willing to barter with you. These big corporations, you know, how many times have you walked into, you know, whether it be Staples, Costco, or what have you? Well, this is what we're doing, and this is how we do it. And this is, you know, we don't accept that. We don't accept that card here. We dictate how we are, you know, and nine times out of ten, you may reach a nice person that says, you know, I don't necessarily agree, but my hands are tied. I can't do anything. The corporation won't let me. They've closed out ways for me to be able to do that. And that is the evidence you need that it's all about control. So the last time, last Monday, when we were talking, and I've got less than a minute here, actually... There's the outro music. So when we come back, I'm going to dive into this cultural warfare. This cultural warfare is, you know, happening in the classroom. It's happening in so many different ways. The southern border, China, in so many different ways. So we'll be right back and start going through the rest of the list of the warfare. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
All right, so cultural warfare is obviously a warfare tactic that has been used on us for a long time. The first culture, or when you look at a culture, the American culture has, you know, it's kind of an amalgamation of individual ethnic cultures and so forth. But it does have a unique culture, and you have to understand what that culture is so that you can find its vulnerabilities and you attack those vulnerabilities. Now, when we look at the American culture is all about limited government. Well, how do you attack limited government? Well, you have to get the people to be okay with government doing things that it doesn't have the ability to do. And so, again, we kind of covered this with the Social Security. In other words, the cultural warfare had begun already in getting people to say, well, if we all agree with it, then, yeah, government can do it. Technically, no. Legally, no. Based on the Constitution, they can't do Social Security. Now, what has to be done to fix Social Security is we have to actualize it. In other words, we don't just not pay it because we owe that to everybody the government has lied to. The only people government really owes to anybody regarding the harm that they've done to them is, you know, to the general, we the people. They've lied to lots of people, employees. They've created power and created positions and created pensions for federal employees to come and work and do things, but technically, government doesn't owe those people that, not at the expense of we the people. But when it comes to how they've lied to us, we the people, the one lie that I believe they can't get away with, that we actually have to actualize it and end it. Actualizing it means that we're going to honor to all of those people that were lied to. Because that's everybody. Well, everybody except for the public servants. The public servants, they think they have a legitimate 401k. They think they have their own legitimate retirement. Actually, they don't. Because their compensation was enumerated in the Constitution. Now, the only people that they actually have legitimate ties and actually can be held to the standards of their compensation and the contract of labor contracts are those who they actually have the power to employ, the Department of Defense. If they made promises, which they did, and they've lied, which they have, and taken back compensation that was promised, I was promised free medical and free dental for life. And now that's all been perverted and changed and morphed into how they want to control me. And that's how insidious government is. But what they do is they grant themselves things that they have no authority to do. They did have the authority to grant very specific things to, you know, those people who were volunteering into the military or whatever they stipulated as a part of that compensation for a legitimate contract. But if they have a contract out there for employment that's not legitimate, like the Department of Education or Energy and all of these departments, because they don't have the legitimate authority to even have those jobs. But just like Social Security can be actualized and it can be dealt with and pushed back down to the states, and the federal government would subsidize that and make sure that only the Social Security benefits are being paid. But today, look at Social Security. Anybody and everybody under the sun, from kids that, you know, can't drink soda because they get an upset tummy tum, well, they're on disability from Social Security. It's that insane. They're enabling everybody because their objective is to destroy all of these things. Keep spending, keep spending. We haven't reached critical mass yet. Or they haven't put the dominoes, they haven't knocked down the dominoes for the critical mass to occur or the crisis to occur for us to actually be seized, because that's what's going to happen. That is how it happens every time. And there's a really good book, Crisis, From Crisis to Leviathan, by Robert Higgs. Robert Higgs actually spells it all out. And this is why, you know, a long time ago, actually last year, I did a special show on how it took two parties, both parties, it took both parties, the Democrat and the Republican Party, to work together to actually create tyranny. They both had to support the concept for tyranny to continue. It started with the railroad companies. That's one of the few things that they started getting involved in the 1820s. As we look and as we look at how they, every time government started operating outside the framework of the Constitution, they instantly started creating, you know, this tyranny. And both parties, what the party that did it, the other party would complain. And then when the party got empowered, the first thing they did was they changed it to how they wanted to support it. And then, you know, it just became this constant morphing power. Look at the Department of Interior. Look at the, you know, every single one of these departments that were created, they have morphed themselves, or they've gone through a metamorphosis and changed from this little caterpillar to these big, huge monsters. Anyway, so cultural warfare isn't just about the invasion on our border. Cultural warfare are tactics that are literally designed to change and destroy the principal culture of this, of our society, of a free society. In other words, their objective is to take away our liberties and our freedom. And then when they grant you back based on your behavior, well, we'll allow you to have these freedoms. Look at it. It's the same thing of what they're doing with the social credit system in China. They want to get us to a point, and they're almost there. The whole world is almost there. And as you see these outcries, you know, these protests in the street, you know, in Poland and in Czechoslovakia, or, you know, in all of these different countries that are formerly named, for those of us that, you know, can't keep up with how they are named. But the fact of the matter is, Belarus, the fact of the matter is that when they start going out to these protests, all they're doing is they're creating a crisis. Anarchy is a tool that government uses to control you more. And so when we look at how they inject anarchy, and then they go, all of a sudden the outcome is government somehow got more control. It's never, protests have never really led to, you know, people say, well, the American Revolution, but that was not a protest. That was a legal, that was a legal argument between the colonists and Britain. They used First Amendment petitions. There were some anarchical protests like the Boston Tea Party, but that was bad behavior. And many of the framers looked at that, the Sons of Liberty and so forth, as, you know what? We understand what you did, but we need to actually do this in a civil manner. And that's why when you read the ratification debates, it comes really clear. They kind of come around full circle and help everybody understand that everything that they're doing in a civil manner. And now we've lost civility as a nation because that's another core principle. That is another core principle of the American culture, civility. Now look at how diametrically opposed we are on so many different topics that people get triggered. And there are people, because they don't like, you know, that you don't support their agenda, like the transgenderism, that we're seeing more and more of these transgenderists, whatever, we're seeing more of them getting into schools with guns or taking uncivil behavior so that they, because the ends justify their means. Well, they know for a fact that they will not win the argument based on the merits, the legal merits of their argument. And this is how they understand it too, folks. They know, which is why they do not want you to give them First Amendment petitions. This is why they're going to laugh at you. They're going to mock you. And folks, everybody in America, the average voter in America, when they see government mocking and laughing at them and ignoring them, that right there, I believe, is the crux of the turning point of the hearts and minds of America. In other words, we're at that point of the Cultural Revolution, whether we actually do wake up. We hear people use the term, it's time to wake up, but they're not pointing you towards a tangible solution. It's time to wake up, vote Republican. Well, that's not solving the problem. It's time to wake up and, you know, do this. Whatever it is that they're telling you to do, it is not solving the problem if they're not including full, holding government fully accountable to the Constitution in every facet, every way, and demanding full compliance. And so that's why this whole barrage of First Amendment petitions are going to be levied against these guys over the next year, year and a half, guys and gals that are in government. We're going to prove that these folks have no business being public servants, that they've taken an oath that they don't honor, that they're legally violating their oath of office. So when America sees that, you know, these guys have a responsibility to do something and they're laughing and mocking at us, what they're telling us is we the people have no power anymore. That's how enabled these folks are. They really believe that they've gone so far down this line that they possess that power. And all it takes is a flash for people to realize that we need to start voting for constitutionalists and we have to start injecting constitutional tests. We need to make sure that our public servants are accountable to us and our system will work. It will get rid of all of this unconstitutional government, and we will actually relish and revere in our liberties once again. So this cultural warfare isn't just about, you know, this immigration, but it is a lot about the immigration because they're getting people to come here that are completely ignorant on our culture, on our liberties and these things that we hold dear. And they're trying to make sure that they get access. Now, to be clear, I honestly don't believe that, you know, the best result is to just, you know, deport these people and they can never come back. I think that there's a lot of people that want to come here, and I think there's a lot of people that need to come here. But we need to look at the countries where there's that many people coming, like from Central and Latin America, folks, it only reeks of the fact that those governments are so corrupt and they're such pawns working for the communist globalists. They're such pawns that when we take control, the first thing we do is we need to extend citizenship, get everybody to go back, get citizenship, make these territories, and then as they start migrating towards speaking English and those types of things, using the dollar, our legal, our form of law, and so forth, you know, common law, those types of things, then instantly, you know, these people will be able to come back if they're speaking English. Once they get past a threshold of, you know, whatever it is, I would recommend 80%. I think that every country, when it becomes a state and their citizens become citizens, the only way they become citizens and this to happen is probably an 80% absorption of, you know, all of our culture, both the English, speaking English, writing English, you know, understanding our history, those types of things. We need to have a higher percentage because bringing a state of people into the United States that doesn't understand, we need to have a majority of those folks understanding this. And the only reason why you got that 20% or this, you know, this outlier is because the fact of the matter is, and this is something that when you hear stereotypes, when you hear adages, there are truths to these things. It is hard to teach an old dog new tricks. And so when you look at the older generation, the majority of the people of the older generation will not feel obliged to actually learn English, to, you know, to use the system. They'll rely upon their kids to do those things for them. And that's what happens. But we still have to have a high measure. It's got to be more than just 50%. It's got to be significantly more. But making this solves the whole problem on our southern border because it moves our southern border down to Panama. It moves it down to Venezuela. It moves it down to, you know, Latin America. And maybe it moves it all the way through the Americas period. Now, we have a problem. And that cultural problem is Canada in our hemisphere because Canada is a commonwealth and they're actually and directly tied to England, where all of these other countries are actually, you know, up for grabs for whoever's got money. That's why they go back and forth. These banana wars and so forth are constantly tossing them to and fro, ebb and flow. So when we start looking at the cultural warfare, and we understand what they're doing to us, the solution is actually really clear as well. We have all of the authority in the Constitution to repel invaders. We also have the authority to admit states in the Union. So once those people become citizens, they're more than welcome to come back up here. But Mexico is a big part of the problem as well. And when we're talking about cultural warfare, instead of trying to defend and allowing them to destroy our culture, we need to grow our culture. And we need to grow the concepts of liberty. You know, I metaphorically speaking, and I'm going to just kind of go down this real quick path. When I look at why government is so problematic, let's look at the lamp of liberty and why it is not burning bright. And why the lamp of our government, because the lamp of liberty really it should be symbolic burning at our government. In other words, when we the people are doing the right things, holding government accountable, that lamp of liberty is bright. I mean blindingly bright as a beacon on the hill calling all to come hither. It's not the sirens in the mist in the, on the ocean in, you know, this beautiful song attracting the sailor to approach them in the rocks, because the siren song is one of danger because it is getting people to actually go into the unknown. When you see that bright light of liberty in the night, you realize that there is something that is, you know, there that is of safe value. I mean, you know, when you're lost and you're wandering in the woods and, you know, you realize that, hey, there's a light over there, that means that there's somebody there. That means that that somebody is probably civilized, that somebody can, you know, help me. And people go to the light for help. America should be that light to help the whole world. But instead of burning the bright lamp of liberty, they have changed the fuel to one of very dark. It's like a black light. And you know, if you've ever looked at a black light doesn't emit a lot of light. That's why they call it a black light. But when you look around the room, it emits a type of wavelength that responds to very, all of a sudden, the things that are illuminating are those objects that have that response to that light. It's a very dark and evil light. And so what has happened, because we have failed to hold our government accountable, we've allowed our government to change the fuel of our lamp from one of liberty to one of enslavement and a very dark energy, a very dark political energy, which is the fuel that is centralizing powers and controlling us. Liberty is lost when you have government burning that type of fuel. And so I'm getting really metaphorical here, but let me now add the parable of the 10 virgins. We have seen the signs. We know what is going on. We know where the problem is. We've got 5 virgins that have the right fuel. It is not time for the bridegroom. We have time to actually change out those virgins' lamps that do not have oil and give them the oil of liberty so that all of our government can fire and burn the bright lamp of liberty. I'm mixing metaphors here and parables, but the point is taken, folks, that when you really start looking at it, who do you blame? It is the nature of people to actually become corrupt. And whenever you let money come in and we allow these people, and as a matter of fact, we're going to get into this where we're going to find in the ratification debates how they're aware of how money corrupts and how money will actually influence elections and so forth. That is not a Republican form of government. When somebody uses money to influence, the government itself. So, when we start looking at where we are and this cultural warfare, we have to start restoring things. And truly, the one thing in regarding the cultural warfare that we have to address is us. I go right back around to how I started this show off, that you have to look at yourself in the mirror. You. And you know a lot of other people that share your same ideals. They need to look at themselves in the mirror and say, why are they not exerting and, putting any time into the things that are important? Maybe liberty isn't important. I might be wrong. Maybe it's okay to be a slave. Maybe it's okay to not have control. I say otherwise. It's not okay. I say we have to take our controls back. We have to get government to be confined to the few powers delegated. That's what I say. What say you? Because we are the problem. We have to first admit that we're a part of the problem. An alcoholic, the fundamentals of fixing the problem, we have to acknowledge our share of the problem. Because we're not taking the little bit of time to get these petitions and to actually hold government accountable. Prove me wrong. I invite anybody to prove me wrong that the First Amendment right of petition to petition government for the redress of grievances is not an empowerment of the people in holding their government accountable. So if we have right there in the Constitution this protected right to control our government, and our government is completely out of control, then who do you really blame? Because the fault and the burden lies with us. If we don't do it, no one will. And that's why it's now or never. So, moving on, Congress, when we look at the cultural warfare on the south of us, Congress has been getting away with classifying what's going on the southern border as immigration. Well, hold on. There's a lot more than just people wanting to come here. And we've gone through this whole concept that immigration is an individual initiation. In other words, you want to come to the United States. You want to immigrate. You want to become an immigrant. then it's real easy. You just go online. Everybody has these phones. Almost everybody on these trains coming up here, everybody that's in this huge movement coming here, they all have a phone. Well, that phone, all they've got to do is access the United States government State Department and go into, I want to be an immigrant, and apply. You don't get on a train. You don't start walking up here, and you don't do those things. You apply, because if you want to be here, you have to fill out that application. That's the law. But if you come to the border and cross it without even trying to initiate an immigration, then you have relinquished your access and right to be an immigrant. In other words, you have violated our laws, and at this point, you are not worthy of becoming an immigrant. And if you look at what our government is doing, they're enabling, and they're actually doing the exact opposite of what they should be doing. Why? And it is very clear. They are trying to culturally destroy us. This is a warfare tactic. So when we actually start looking at everything else that's associated with this, you know, whether it be health or what have you, as a matter of fact, there are such dark and evil people out there that if, you know, I wouldn't put it past a, you know, Soros or some small cadre of people finding people with really bad venereal diseases. I mean, the kind you can't cure, you know, and other diseases like the next pandemic. Don't be surprised if it comes across our border, because that is going to be the injection point. Because, hey, you know, you may try to come via an airplane, you know, from China or someplace into America that way. You got to go back. They won't let you come that way. But if you come across our border, boy, that's how we're vulnerable. It's not even vulnerable. That's how they want to destroy us. And that's how they're telling us that. Now, another class or tactic of warfare is cyber warfare. Cyber warfare is, you know, using electronic, you know, by either manipulating, and look at the concept of manipulation, manipulation of data, manipulation of facts. What Google has been doing, as they've basically taken full control of the internet and started actually censoring the internet and keeping you from having access by controlling the search engine itself and saying, if, you know, somebody searches for this, we want to change the outcome. Now, there's very specific things that they try to protect and keep people from finding out. And I'm telling you right now, if you have a Gmail account, get rid of it, because those of us with independent domain mail services like myself, we cannot email you. There's a gal that, you know, she says I didn't email her back. I went and I checked. Yeah, I did. I've got to get a hold of her this week. It's Cynthia Lee. And so I will call you Cynthia Lee. I don't want to make any associations because I hate doing that, but you know who you are. And if you're using Gmail and I'm not responding to you, or at least you think I'm not responding to you, stop using Gmail, because they do everything they can to filter those things out. Now, you may, at first it shows up in your junk mail. At first it may be in your spam, but eventually they put it in so that you no longer get it at all, because I get those notices from Gmail all the time that the recipient did not get this email. Folks, we'll get more into this. We're just a couple more shows away from wrapping this stuff up. I'm J.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution?
To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.